plague, a great plague. And, so I said, well, my skills, insecure, don't like to read, Mountain Dew for brain supporters. So I said, no masks. I used all the tools, no masks, misinformation, telling people whatever I wanted just to try and help the economy. And with COVID, I was able to make COVID so strong. Okay. Almost as strong now as the 1917 flu, which I call 1917, because I said it once incorrectly, and now I'm going to say it wrong 10,000 times. Malcolm Gladwell, who's half a black, by the way, not a lot of people, he's so light-skinned, not a lot of people know that. He says if you do something 10,000 times, you become good at it. So if I say the 1917 flu 10,000 times, that'll just become the thing. So we're doing very strongly, and we're great teammates.
Take a look at some of these charts.
I'd love to.
We're going to look.
Let's look.
And if you look at death,
start to go up
here's
again.
one. Well, right here, the United States is lowest in numerous categories. We're lower than the world.
Lower than
We're
the
lower
world.
than
What does that mean?
Europe.
In
Take a
what?
look.
In what?
Take a look. Right here. Here's case death.
Oh, you're doing death as a proportion of cases. I'm talking about death as a proportion of population. That's where the US is really bad. Much worse than South Korea, Germany, etc.
You can't do that. You have
Why
to
can't I
go
do that?
you have to go by where, look, here is the United States. You have to go by the cases
Why
of
not
death.
As a proportion of
When we have
population?
somebody, what it says is when you have somebody that has it, where there's a case,
Oh, okay.
the people that live
Sure.
from those cases.
It's surely a relevant statistic to say if the US has X population and X percentage of death of that population
No,
versus
because you
South
have to go
Korea.
by the cases.
Well, look at South Korea, for
If
example. 51 million population, 300 deaths. It's like, it's crazy
you don't
compared to
know
other
that.
countries. I do. It's
You
on
don't know that.
the. You think they're faking their statistics? South Korea? An
I won't get
advanced
into that
country?
because I have a very good relationship with the country, but you don't know that. And they have spikes. Look,
Germany low, 9,000?
here's one right here, United States. You take the
Anyway.
number of cases. Now
Okay.
look, we're last, meaning we're first.
Last, I don't know
We
what
have
we're
the
first
best.
in. As a
Well, take
what?
a look.
Okay.
Again, it's
I just.
cases.
Okay.
And we have cases
I mean,
because of the testing.
a
Wait.
thousand Americans are dying a day, but I understand on cases it's different.
No, but you're not reporting it correctly, Jonathan.
I think I am, but.
If you take a look at this other chart,
Okay.
look, this is our testing, I believe. This is the testing, yeah.
Yeah, we do more tests.
No, wait a minute. Well, don't we get credit for that? And because we do more tests, we have more cases. In other words, we test more. We have. Now,
But.
take a look. The top one, that's a good thing, not a bad thing.
But
The top, Jonathan.
if
The
hospital rates
top
were
is
going down
cases.
and deaths were going down, I'd say terrific. You deserve to be praised for
Well, they
testing,
don't
but they're
even,
all going up.
they very rarely talk.
60,000 Americans are in
If
hospital.
you watch the
1,000
news
dying
or
a
read the
day.
papers, they usually talk about new cases, new cases, new cases.
I'm talking about death.
Well, you look
It's
at
going
death.
up.
Death is way down from where it was.
It's 1,000 a
Death.
day. It was 2,500. It went down to 500. Now it's going up
Death.
again.
Excuse me. Where it was is much higher than where it is right now.
It went down, then
It
it went up again.
spiked, but now it's going down again.
It's
It's
going
going
up.
down in Arizona. It's going down in Florida.
Nationally,
It's
it's going
going down
up.
in Texas. Take a look at this. These are the
It's
tests.
going down in Florida?
Yeah, it's going. It leveled out and it's going down. That's my report as of yesterday.
Hello, I'm from the U.S. government with an update on our pandemic response. In the space of just a few months, our Don't Worry, Bro, It's Just the Flu policy has gotten a ton of you killed. Some say this tragedy was inevitable, but actually, studies show that if we'd simply responded like other governments who listen to scientists instead of Chuck Woolery and the MyPillow guy, we could have prevented almost all of those deaths. Unfortunately for you, the amount of responsibility we take in doing our job comes to approximately call, which is why we got more of you killed than 59/11's Trump 2020. With a president like this, who needs terrorists? As part of our distract from how many of you were getting killed policy, we'll be telling you the real threat to America is minorities demanding not to be murdered by cops. And to make you feel safe, we've deployed a secret police force to kidnap people off your streets without probable cause. Some call that taking a dump on the Constitution, but we call it law and order. to all the well-armed militias cheering us on as we literally do the one thing the Second Amendment was supposed to prevent.
What's that? People are looting in the streets.
Oh, darling. The real looting is the one we're doing right here.
As part of our
exploit this crisis to funnel wealth from the port of the rich policy.
Like, remember when we told you COVID was no big deal so we could buy ourselves just enough time to sell off our personal stocks before the crash, which we knew was coming?
Phew. Or when we passed the biggest bailout package in history,
which funneled tons to corporations and easily forgivable loans.
We even gave billions to churches bankrupted by sex abuse scandals.
Even the I and I Love Small Government Rand Institute got some of the loot.
But hey, don't forget that single barely above minimum wage check we sent you.
You know,
the one you simply handed over to your landlord to pay the rent,
who in turn handed it to a bank to pay their mortgage.
Which is how we laundered another $1 trillion to banks through the working class.
Profits made, profits kept.
Now millions of you face homelessness and 1 in 5 families are going hungry.
But look on the bright side.
Billionaires regained $500 trillion of their wealth.
We're not in this together.
If you survive till November, be sure to re-elect us so we can get the rest of you killed in the looming climate and extinction crisis.
You know,
that other crisis we're ignoring and plan to profit from obscenely at your expense.
Trump 2020.
You. Of course, we realize that after lying to you, robbing you, and getting your loved ones killed, some of you might be contemplating not voting for us.
But don't worry.
That's why we've adopted our deregister millions of you policy,
as well as our closed polling stations,
file lawsuits,
and let's spread bullshit about voter fraud policy.
And if that's still not enough,
well, maybe we'll just cancel the election.
Trump 2020.
Now get back to work, America. Our stocks won't make themselves go up, you pieces of.
God bless America, except Portland and Chicago.
Authorized by the Department for Sacrificing School Teachers to the Great Bull God to make line go up.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
All right, you're listening to the radio WGXC, Acre 90.7 FM, and now we've got Tom DiPietro on the line, the Hudson Common Council president, who's going to preview the Hudson Common Council meeting. It's the informal meeting next week, is that right?
That's right, Tom. Every month we have an informal meeting on the second Tuesday of the month. The second Tuesday, and then the form. Am I getting it backwards? The informal meeting is on, Monday. Sorry. Oh, boy, I'm sorry. These COVID times, you know, are really messing with my head, Tom.
True about everyone.
Yeah. Let me get to the calendar again because I'm confused myself. No, it's on the second Tuesday. I'm sorry.
So second Tuesday.
Okay, let's see. Informally, no. I got it backwards. Now, the informal meeting is always the first The informal meeting is always the first Tuesday of the month, and then the formal is the second Tuesday. I know it'd be much easier if we had a set actual day, but it works out better this way. Anyway, having straightened that all out, let me tell you about one other thing that's going on that same Monday at 4 o'clock, the tourism board's meeting, because the tourism board, which is a creation of both the Common Council and the mayor's office, has been doing a fantastic job of disbursing money through a grant process that enhances sort of the tourist experience in Hudson. But they've imagined that as not so much marketing the city as making the city an attractive place to come even during these COVID times. And they've allocated money to all kinds of great projects. Like if you heard the Thursday afternoon show yesterday, we met with Sam Merritt, who runs Waterfront Wednesdays, bringing people down to the waterfront and, you know, practicing the proper protocols, but taking 8 people at a time on the Apollonia, a beautiful ship that Sam and his friends restored. And they also have sponsored pontoon taxi drives over to the Hudson Athens Lighthouse. So this money that was allocated from the tourism, the lodging tax, has been going to some fantastic projects, and you'll see a lot more of them happening through the upcoming months. I just wanted to give a shout out to that because the tourism board is meeting next Monday, August 10th, at 4 o'clock to sort of deal with a lot of their other applicants. They've gotten close to 40 different applications, and they've been very thorough in going through each application. And then later that night, at the informal meeting, which is the first Monday of every month at 7 p.m., the council will be considering those applications, because every allocation of money has to be approved by the council ultimately. Other things on our agenda, and we have a lot coming up, even though it's August. I already took my vacation, so did many of my colleagues. But, you know, the two big issues right on our table now are a short-term rental regulation and a pilot for a Galvin affordable housing project on North 7th Street here in Hudson. And both of them are sort of coming to a head, and we've gotten plenty of community response already. And we'll probably get some more before we actually vote. But, of course, the final votes happen at the formal meeting on Tuesday the 18th at 7 o'clock. And just to, reiterate what was scattered in the beginning, the informal is always the first Monday of the month, and the formal is always the second Tuesday, both of them at 7 p.m.
And the governor extended the executive order on online town meetings on August 5th to September 4th, I believe. To attend these meetings, what do people do?
It's pretty easy here in Hudson. There are multiple. I mean, if you want to participate, you have to go to the Hudson City website, cityofhudson.org, click on the calendar event, and that comes up on the calendar right on the front page, the opening page, and you'll see the name of the meeting. You click on there, and there will be the Zoom invitation. Now, as you know, Tom, anybody can listen to any public meeting, because we have a relationship with WGXC, where we're one of your streaming partners, the city is. And pretty much every single meeting in the city of Hudson is streamed live at our dedicated streaming site at WGXC. So you go to WGXC, you look up the city of Hudson, and you can hear any meeting, pretty much any meeting that takes place in Hudson. There's also, with the council formal and informal, we run a YouTube live meeting. The problem with the YouTube and the stream, you can't necessarily participate directly. Whereas if you're on the actual Zoom, you can participate directly. And of course, I even take live phone calls on my personal phone and we'll relay those questions to the meeting. So we've really done a great job of keeping these meetings open and available to everyone. I mean, it's hard, of course, if you have no device of any kind,
the informal is the one where people are encouraged to participate and give comments more than the formal.
Correct. Yeah. Exactly. The informal, when things go right, we actually discuss everything that's going to come up at the formal meeting the next week. Unfortunately, sometimes there's some last minute introductions in that between time, so there's less time to really discuss them. But I'm trying to, you know, get a hold of that and insist that everything that comes up at the formal has to be first discussed at the informal. It's very hard to do, but it's important with the really not controversial, but the issues that matter a lot to people. In other words, if it's just a transfer of a budget line, well, that doesn't really have to go through a lot of discussion. They never do. If it's a contribution that we're accepting, you know, you don't need a real conversation about that either. So those things, if they come in at the last minute before the formal meeting, that's fine. But if it's something really important, a new law or something like this pilot agreement, you need to have a lot of public discussion first. And, you know, we've even been willing to have special meetings for public discussion. I should mention that with the law, the regulation, the short-term rental regulation, even once we've voted on it, once the council votes on it, it's still the mayor has to have a formal public hearing by law, by charter, before he decides to sign it or not. So there's always an extra stage for public, an extra layer of public comment forthcoming.
So I have to ask the tough question about the pilot issue. Last month that was brought up, and the several people on the Common Council voted against it. They said that they were surprised that it wasn't on the agenda, and B, they said it was red line marked up as if it was marked up a few minutes before the meeting. And I guess the question, was Galvin marking it up right before the meeting?
Okay, that's a slight misrepresentation. First of all, it had been redlined, as they call it. And the red lines were very minimal. They were mainly positive changes, a rise in the amount of the pilot and one or two other dates. I mean, it was not a significant change. Granted, it was introduced at the last minute because there was pressure from councilmen and the mayor to put it on the agenda that night. That was the decision that I made at the last minute under that pressure. Excuse me, but it's not as if it was a completely new document. That was a misrepresentation. There are a couple minor changes, and the one significant change was actually a raise in the amount that was going to be paid as a pilot. And since then, this Tuesday we will have, I hope, a version that will be the version we then vote on the following week. So, you know, there's been a lot of negotiation, a lot of discussion, and I hope we can get this all resolved more neatly this time. So, you know, yeah, it was a fair criticism to say that it was brought up at the last minute. But, it was defeated, partly for that reason. So we're going to give it another go this month.
And you think you'll have the final version, but it may change based on the meeting, I guess, right?
Yes, it's not the same. It will definitely not be the one that was presented at the last meeting.
No. I mean, you say you'll have the what you hope is the final version at this informal meeting, I'm suggesting it may change for the formal meeting because of what happens at this informal meeting.
Oh, I can say there is a possibility, but it wouldn't be significant. You know, it wouldn't be like a complete revamping. It might be who knows? Maybe they'll actually up the pilot even more so. But if you read yesterday's paper, yesterday or the day before, the pilot is now up to 100, beginning at 100,000 a year. It had begun, I think the original offer was $77,000. And of course, that's with a 2% escalator every year. The original proposal had been for 40 years. It's now down to 30. So there's been, and there's a lot more that's been incorporated in the discussion. Guarantees of how it's going to work, oversight guarantees, all kinds of things. I mean, you know, there's always going to be objection. There are some people who basically don't want affordable housing. But a rule of thumb anywhere you go is that if you want affordable housing in your community, you have to give a pilot. Nobody does it out of the kindness of their heart.
And just to explain to people, pilots are often given to companies to lure them to town to help with jobs and stuff. In this case, it's getting Galvin to build, instead of market rate housing, which they would make money on, below market rate affordable housing might not necessarily make money on. So it's an incentive to get them to build something that the economy wouldn't usually support.
Exactly, Tom. A pilot means a payment in lieu of taxes. And, you know, it's often given to lure companies. But even those pilots often have a lot of demands. You know, you have to show that you're actually providing real jobs and things like that. In this case, it's simply to create affordable housing, which otherwise would not be created.
And is there...
Usually the pilot for a company goes through the IDA, the Industrial Development Agency. And this one goes directly to the council because it's a housing pilot.
And I guess I was confused listening to the meeting. Does it come?
A lot of people were.
Does it come back to the? Is this the only time the council is going to vote on this issue, or is it coming back to the council later? Is this just the vote on the pilot, or because
this is just a vote on the pilot? But then our role diminishes. But another agency that will have a major role in this is the planning board, because they look at any site a plan that this is going to involve, and you know, I'm sure they'll be. Our planning board is superb. And I guarantee that they will look at this from a different perspective, not so much the financial, but from the actual building and its requirements.
And I think the vote was 5-4-4, and that wasn't enough to pass with an abstention. How many people do you have to turn votes? How many votes do you have to turn around to get this passed?
Just one.
And I think there's a over the weekend there's going to be a effort to make some phone calls on that. I think I've seen some effort online about that.
Yeah, I've heard some of that. But, you know, I mean, that helps, I suppose. But, you know, it's really for the two people who I think are most likely to change their vote, there has to be, you know, real change in the document. You know, I have no idea how to measure that public pressure, if it matters or not. I mean, it's a worthy effort, I suppose. But, you know, we were hampered a little bit in this vote because one of the aldermen actually works for the Galvin Foundation as a housing officer. So he was he's been recused from all the discussion and all the voting. So it made a little, you know, that removed a potential vote from the process. But I think, you know, this has been on the agenda for a long time now. So I think the mayor handed us this project back in April or maybe even earlier than that. So we've had a lot of discussion, a lot of movement forward, and a lot of public comment.
And the short-term housing proposal, is that what you want to explain that briefly?
Yes. You know, there's been a lot of complaints about you know, short-term rentals in the city of Hudson have eaten up potential rental spots. Now, how it impacts the rental market in general seems to be pretty obvious. If you take a rental unit, a regular rental unit, and take it off the market and turn it into a short-term rental, you have one less apartment to rent out to somebody who wants to live here. So that alone is enough to suggest the impact. And there are plenty of them here. So the idea is to come up with a regulation that sort of, first of all, puts it on a fair, an equal footing with hotels and regular B&Bs, which have a lot of regulation and, you know, by the state. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is just to preserve the community character of Hudson. I mean, I myself lived next to a building, a house that no one lives in except for the occasional Airbnb renter. And that's, you know, that's not a good thing for a community. So what we're coming up with, I think, is a good consensus. I mean, there's still going to be, like all these things, Tom, you never get complete buy-in from everyone. There will be people who will be disturbed by this law if it goes through as currently written. But a lot of people who were complaining, I think, have been accommodated. But we're not at the final law yet. We're close to it.
And I guess just the economics, the supply and demand. If there's 100 rental apartments and you take 50 of them off the market, the price of the other rental apartments is going to go up. And that's
exactly. And that's been proven time and again through serious study. You know, the people who are against this law keep saying, oh, we need more study. We don't need more study. There have been studies all over the place from really good sources like the Harvard Business Review, the Economic Policy Institute, and they have demonstrated two things pretty much, you know, clearly that one, a rise in short-term rentals increases taxes, believe it or not. So all these people claim the taxes are too high. That's why they have to short-term rental. Well, the short-term rental is creating that higher tax. And secondly, that it diminishes it makes rents go up in general.
So the short-term rentals is part of the problem that the property taxes went up hugely a couple years ago or last year? I don't remember when it was.
Yeah, it was last year.
Okay, anything else going on at the meeting this coming Monday night at 7 p.m.?
You know, then just the normal stuff. It's, you know, some people show up for the big issues, and I think sometimes they get bored by seeing all the kind of ordinary work we have to do, which, you know, amounts to paying the bills, doing the, you know, procedural and the process things that are just the everyday business of local government. But I like it when people come because then they see, you know, it's certainly not glamorous.
Yes. So people can tune in again at the Hudson Common Council or the City of Hudson website. Look there to find the Zoom information. But you can also look for City of Hudson on YouTube. And you can also
go on YouTube. And at the Common Council page on the city website, links to the live stream that WGXC has so graciously provided us.
Yeah, so there's a play button there, and there's a play button yep. on any WGXC.org page. If you click on Listen and you look for, there's many streams, but you look for the Hudson Common Council this coming Monday, August 10th at 7 p.m.
Yep.
All right.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk to you soon.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Here is an excerpt from the March for Universal Housing held in Hudson on August 6th and put on by Kites Nest and the Social Justice Leadership Academy.
My name is Gabrielle Xavier, and I live here in Hudson. And for my whole life, I have been fighting with my family to keep our apartment. So I decided that I would be here today to be an advocate for housing. Housing, something everyone should be entitled to, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So why is it that something that should be a human right come at such a high cost? Mm-hmm. Why does it come at such a high cost to have a roof over my head, a place to sleep, a place to call home, or a place to feel safe? Well, I'm going to tell you why. Our economy doesn't care about its people. What they care about is the money that's coming into their pockets at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
How do I know this? Because I've grown up watching it happen with my family my whole life. From the time I was a newborn to the ages of 9 to 10, I lived on 6th Street. Living there was an experience, though, let me tell you. We lived in a one-bedroom apartment with 6 people. Me and my sister shared a bedroom with my mother the whole time we lived there. We all slept in the same bed and everything. Me and my sister did end up getting bunk beds, but we felt safer sleeping with our mother most of the time. My brother slept in a very small room that really was not suitable, considering how small it was. My grandmother slept in the dining room because we turned it into her room. And my dad slept on the couch because me and my sister slept with my mother. Now, you're probably wondering why we would put ourselves in a situation like this, and it's simply because we didn't really have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, my family has always struggled with money. Between my mom and my dad having 3 kids, 2 living with her, and her son being in and out of the system, and them also struggling to find jobs, they struggled to provide for all of us, but they did what they could, and I am thankful for that to this day.
Yes.
Yes, Mama.
Woo! Mama.
Now back to us living in the apartment. My parents had been paying $900 for the apartment, which was fine, but as time went on, our house started to have problems, such as ceilings were caving in, mold spores were appearing, and other problems. But when we reported these problems, nothing was being done. So since nothing was being done, my parents stopped paying rent. So then this is where we started looking to move out and find somewhere else. And we did in Fallbrook, which is out of Hudson. And mind you, me and my sister are students of Hudson City School District. So we went to school in Hudson and lived in Fallbrook, which is very inconvenient because, yes, we were living in a house that had enough room for everyone. But now the problem was getting to school on time. This did not end up happening. We were always late nonstop, which then caused us to have CPS cases for a couple of years. The cases got so bad to where they would start pulling me and my sister out of our classes to question us.
Mm.
Mind you, I'm a kid that has always struggled in school. It takes a lot of one-on-one time with me to even understand the basics of a new topic. So when I was in class getting the help I needed, they would be calling me down to the office out of class to talk to social workers about why I was late and what was going on at home. So then my grades started to suffer tremendously, and I was falling behind fast. So besides school, everything was good until last year, our landlord out of nowhere said they were selling the house, giving us only a week's notice.
What?
Illegal.
Obviously, we weren't going to find a new house within a week, so we ended up taking about a month, but felt very rushed. From there on, we started looking for a new place, and we found one within Hudson, after struggling to find one that was within our price range. We could have found a place out of Hudson, but the only place that we found out of Hudson was in Catskill, and my mom did not want to put me and my sisters to stress of starting at a new school and leaving our friends behind. So now we are currently staying in Hudson in a three-bedroom, two-bathroom apartment for $2,150. Which my parents still struggle to pay to this day. Just so that me and my sister can continue going to school in Hudson. Now there are two reasons today I came to share this story with you guys. The first one is to show our housing system doesn't care about its people and things need to change now.
Yeah! We need change now!
And the second is that rent in Hudson is outrageously priced and not everyone can afford that.
Say that.
All the German lights, this is it, the night of nights. No more rehearsing and nursing a part, we know every card by heart. All the German lights, this is it, we'll hit the heights, and oh what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
Hi, my name is Caitlin. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acra, Catskill, Hudson. Hands-on listener-supported community radio.
Tune in WGXC's new Sunday morning schedule with the Reverend Kim Singletary and There's a Bright Side Somewhere every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. That's followed by the teens from Hudson talking about books they've read on Bound by Books. After the local news at 9 a.m. And at 10 a.m., there's more teens. The Catskill kids from Clubhouse Radio are on at 10 a.m. with lots of music and talk on your community radio station, WGXC.org, 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Amanda Lees of Freehold, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You know, I was listening to the radio and I heard this thing!
90.7 FM. Listener-aided and abetted radio.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Rachel Silverstein is reporting for the Times Union. Governor Andrew M. Cuomo says schools can open this fall. Speaking to reporters late August 7th, the governor said the infection rate is low enough to allow all districts in the state to resume classroom instruction for the coming school year. New York's public school districts, charter schools, and private schools submitted individual reopening plans to the state last month. Cuomo said school districts must hold three virtual parent forums to discuss the reopening plans for August 24th. He said, and I quote, "Parents must have the opportunity to be heard, and the schools should welcome the opportunity to explain the plan," end quote. Schools around the state were closed in March as the coronavirus exploded in New York and students finished the last 3 months of the 2019-2020 school year doing remote studies. Cuomo has requested the school districts provide specific details about COVID-19 testing, contact tracing, and what remote learning would look like. Schools should focus on how they will address equity and access issues that emerge in the spring. Most school districts are doing temperature screening at the door, but Cuomo noted the screenings would not detect asymptomatic spread. So school districts should have a mechanism for COVID-19 tests. including whether it is done at school or local agencies. And you can read the full story in the Times Union. Melanie Lukachevic and Kate Lisa are reporting for Capital Region Independent Media. Legal action taken by Wheel Abrader in Maryland has prompted a second look at the Coeymans Clean Air Law. The law, adopted by the town in March 2019, was originally proposed in July 2018 in response to Mustang Renewable Power Ventures' proposal to import every year 116,000 tons of solid waste, including tires, from 70 Connecticut towns, and to incinerate the material in a kiln at the Lafarge-Holcomb cement plant on Route 9W. Under the law, waste disposal facilities are prohibited from processing more than 25 tons of waste in any 24-hour period. A facility must have a continuous emission monitoring system to monitor the emissions of 19 pollutants, and the data must be published online in real time. Lafarge-Holcomb is now pushing back on the law. Town Supervisor George McHugh said at the July 23rd meeting of the Coeymans Town Board, and I quote, "We received a letter from Lafarge recently regarding a recent law that was very similar to our clean air law that was overturned in Baltimore, Maryland by the district court," end quote. Lafarge-Holcomb Vice President Michael Nixon wrote in the letter, and I quote, "We feel the time has come to take a stronger, more active approach to defending our rights. In addition to being bad policy, the town's clean air law is unlawful. It fails to meet procedural requirements, it is preempted by federal and state law, and it is unconstitutional, arbitrary, and lacks any factual basis," end quote. Nixon also claims the town's clean air law, and I quote, "singles out one facility for disparate treatment," end quote. The town board, July 23rd, created a three-person committee to look into the law as well as the issues raised by the company and appointed Marissa Tute, a teacher in the Robina Coeymans South Clark Central School District, David Kuntz, a lawyer with a practice in Albany, and Steve Coey, a retired state employee, to serve on the ad hoc committee. None of the three appointees have worked for the cement company or have personal ties to it, McHugh said. Town board member Kenneth Burns said he is concerned the town law, as it currently stands, may not hold up in court. Town board members and Robina Village trustees toured the Lafarge plant last week to learn about the company's plan to use tire-derived fuel. McHugh and Burns both support that plan. And you can read the full story in the News Herald. The Altamont Enterprise is reporting the New York State Department of Health has set maximum levels for PFOA, PFOS, and 1,4-dioxane, 3 drinking water contaminants. PFOA and PFOS have each been set at a maximum contaminant level of 10 parts per trillion, while 1,4-dioxane has been set at 1 part per billion. A press release from Governor Andrew Cuomo's office described the regulation setting the 1,4-dioxane level as, and I quote, "first in the nation," end quote, though a 2017 Environmental Protection Agency fact sheet for the chemical includes guidelines issued by 18 other states, some of which recommended levels lower than 1 part per billion in drinking and groundwater. The guidelines set are action levels, meaning that state-regulated actions are triggered when the threshold is exceeded. The EPA is still performing a risk evaluation on 1,4-dioxane, suggesting that it is only a likely carcinogen, but the agency has already established a health advisory for PFOA and PFOS. The impact of exposure to PFOA and PFOS vary from developmental effects to fetus and breastfed infants, increased cancer risk, and liver damage, among other issues. Read the full story in the Altamont Enterprise. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's Revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes? Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, a slight chance of showers with thunderstorms also possible after 9 a.m. It will be partly sunny with a high near 82 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 63. And on Sunday, sunny with a high near 86 degrees. Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 65. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
For some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
I'm on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, and now we're talking with Karen Schomer, who used to have a radio show here on WGXC, and you may know as a local poet, bookseller, musician, performer. You have other nouns you want to include, Karen?
Not any that I want to include.
Let's see. Not any that you want to include.
No. That's good. I mean, I've been living in the area since 2004, and then I've really morphed, as a lot of people do when they get to the Hudson Valley. So, but those are a few great key things to mention, Tom.
And we've got you here to mention that you're performing live music, which doesn't happen much these days, but TSL and Hudson has been opening up their parking lot, and I think this is the third live music show there. This coming Saturday, you're playing with Eric Golden. Is that how you pronounce his last name?
Yep, Eric Golden.
He's known as Reckless Eric to some people.
Right. That's right. TSL did this amazing, well, I guess the jargon right now is pivot, which is one of those appalling words, sort of like curate, but TSL did adapt its sort of mission as the pandemic hit, and they realized that they have this front porch and they have this big parking lot, and that it would be possible to do even programming in a way that was outdoors and relatively safe. And so they've opened up their parking lot to, like, they're doing films. They've had some archival film and performance from Linda Musman and Claudia Bruce's theatrical archive. Like, last weekend they showed some sort of avant-garde films from their early archive. And they have been having live performances, and I'm just, like, so excited, number one, to be able to perform at all, because I really do miss it, and because of all things, we know that live performance is, like, really kind of on the rocks until the pandemic is really, really kind of waved past us. So it's a great opportunity to be able to do anything, and then I'm really especially excited because I'm a lifelong writer, but was never ever a performer until about, like, 5 or 6 years ago. And I would say part of the reason why I do any performances is because of Reckless Eric. He and his wife Amy Rigby, who is a beloved singer-songwriter, invited me to be a guest at a home show that they were doing together, and that was, like, the first time I ever sort of performed lyrics with live music. And then, almost like as a joke, after we did it the first time, we really enjoyed it, and as almost like a joke, we started a band. I guess I say almost a joke because they have these long established careers as musicians, and I had basically never performed with live music, but they called it the Schomer Formation, and we did shows, you know, like every few months for a couple of years together until they, you know, their real careers became, too demanding to have this kind of like live project. So I haven't really performed with Eric since that project kind of got put aside. And I love him sort of deeply and dearly, and it's even a little more meaningful because he's been very public about this. Eric had COVID, and he became ill in February. He was in England, which is where he's from, and he traveled back to the United States, where he lives full time, and felt ill, and was very ill with COVID for weeks and weeks and weeks, and actually even like suffered a heart attack. So it's really like, I just feel so happy that Eric is, you know, kicking strongly, as is his way, and that he agreed to do this show with me. And so we have all sort of new material that we've put together for the show. These are like poems that I wrote, you know, as poems that I brought into Eric, and he came up with music for them. And he plays like a variety of instruments. He's playing electric guitar, he's playing acoustic guitar, he's got a piano, he's got all kinds of effects and pedals and loops and sounds. And he's also playing this thing called an omnichord, which he told me was invented in Japan in the early 80s to try to, it was like part of the Suzuki method for like teaching children how to play instruments. Anyway, I don't know, maybe this is all sounding a bit like far flung, which is actually sort of what's so great about it. Like, it barely seems to make any sense to me, but it's really interesting and fun and feels like a very different thing. So I'm very excited about it.
Yes. And WGXC has broadcast the other two shows, music shows at TSL. And what I was struck by was just the absolute joy of the audience to like be at a live music event or any gathering. I mean, it was the most people I knew in one place since February, probably. And just people were just really super happy. Like when we come out of this, it may be like the happiest day since the end of World War II or something.
Wow. I mean, that just sort of reaffirms like how much I love TSL for coming up with the idea. You know, they have this amazing space. They've had it since the 90s, and they just evolve all the time. And community is obviously like what's always been number one with them, like having a space for the community. So that they've kind of managed to do it in this way that's really in keeping. Like, it's not just, I mean, it's great that some of Hudson's restaurants have been able to open, but this is really about supporting, like, creativity and artists, and we all, like, need it so much. So I'm really excited. It makes me feel like, you know, we almost all we have to do is show up, you know, because it's just going to feel so good just to be there.
The other thing is that it's this game of trying to figure out who everybody is, because they all have these masks on, and you don't you kind of recognize them, but you don't know for sure. Is that really?
And then you can't tell, like, are they smiling at you?
No, yeah, you can't tell that at all.
Are they happy to see me?
Yeah.
Or are they like looking away? Or like, are they snubbing me?
Yeah,
pretty funny.
Yeah, there seems like there should be some mask innovation where you can like move the mask to smile or, you know, like frown or.
That's kind of like the whole thing is like all very like Curb Your Enthusiasm, like all the little social like quirks that are coming along with this new.
Larry David's the only one happy about all this.
super happy about. They're in that curmudgeon bracket. It's been good for the curmudgeons.
So you also have a not so new, but a fairly new release. Your band, Jaded, how do you say, Azurites?
Jaded Azurites.
Azurites.
So that's like a recording project that I do with Mike Watt, the bass player Mike Watt, that I've been doing. I'm trying to think. So we've put out two digital EPs. They're available through a digital label in the Balkans called Balkan Veliki. And there you can stream them on Bandcamp. So these are EPs that are just bass and voice. And we're working on a third right now. That's also like Mike Watt is another person that is sort of really important to me in terms of encouraging me both as a writer and for getting involved with music. So that's really, really thrilling. The new EP that we're working on is like he asked me to just send him 10 poems and he picked 5 of them and he's composed bass just based on the written poems that I send him. So he composes bass and sends me a bass track, and then I like read the poem into the music that he sent me. So it's a great kind of intuitive, like knowing each other from afar kind of thing, and like very, very, very exciting to work on. And then another guy that I actually met through Mike Watt is a British guy named Ollie Heffernan, and he's one of these people who just is sort of like a little bit below the radar, but he's been making music for like years and years. And Ollie is putting out a record on September 21st through a British label called Golden Body Records, and it's I hope everyone who's listening is like, you know, you're going to get tested on all this information later. So Ollie's current project is called Ivan the Tolerable, and Ollie asked me for writing. He just like emailed me like in a sort of flurry one weekend in the pandemic, and he was like, I just need writing. Just send me anything you have. Send me short stories. So I sent him a couple of short stories that I'd written years ago that were just sitting there. And he gave them to Mike Watt, and Mike Watt read them out loud, and then Ollie set them to music. And this is a record called Out of Season. And so it's like my writing, it's Mike Watt's voice, and it's Ollie's music. And for some reason, this has been like getting press all over the place. So it just got like a 4-star review in Mojo Magazine. And so that's really exciting. So that, and then I have a band, a live band with friends up in Albany called Sky Furrows, and we've played quite a bit in Hudson, and we've played a lot up in Saratoga, and we've played in Albany, and of course, like now, pretty much on hiatus because of the pandemic, but we have a record that we recorded a couple of summers ago, and we're printing up, pressing vinyl copies of that. So Sky Furrow's album is going to be released like at some point in the fall on vinyl. So all of it's really fun. I mean, I continue to sort of really write primarily for the page. I write things that are meant to be sort of, you know, read as poems independent of music, but it's really exciting to have this other outlet and to have music friends so willing to collaborate and come up with music for things that I write and to record them and release them is like, it's really great. The world of sort of publishing poetry is kind of strangely, I don't know, I don't very often like put poems out there to be published in journals and things like that. So it's really great to have like music projects put out.
And you were ahead of the whole pandemic with the recording via distance.
Yeah, like a lot of this stuff. I mean, actually, when I started doing Jaded Azurites with Mike Watt, like, you know, when he wanted me to record vocals, I was sort of scrambling around to figure out, like, oh, who can, where can I record and who can help me? And in fact, like, Reckless Eric has helped by recording me at his, like, home studio. But Mike was very much like, you should learn how to do this yourself. Like, be self-sufficient, be independent. And so I have, like, I'm slowly learning how to use GarageBand, and I have, like, you know, a microphone, and, yeah, so I'm sort of learning how to do my own home recordings, and that's really challenging because I don't have that kind of brain that's good with, like, technical stuff, but it's also, like, great to be able to just do things at home.
And
especially now that I'm home a lot.
And for folks that don't know, I guess we're kind of underselling the legendary importance in the music world of Mike Watt and Reckless Eric. Mike Watt was, of course, the bassist from the Minutemen, which was one of the greatest bands of all time, cut short by the death of Dee Boone, and then did Firehose, and then played with Iggy Pop, and has a long solo career. And Reckless Eric was on Stiff Records in the 70s, and that Whole Wide World song you've probably heard in some Ben Stiller movie, and is just another legend. So you're lucky to work with such momentous figures.
I totally am, and I would say that, like, in addition to both of them, both of them are really, I regard as, like, genius-level musicians. I mean, I guess that kind of sounds a bit overstated, but I don't think it is. Just having been practicing with Reckless Eric recently and watching what he's able to do, I mean, it just blows my mind. It's like music. It's like he's just like sort of broadcasting music from another dimension. It's like coming through him. He just has this incredible, he just seems to bring music to life in the moment that has never existed before, as if it's always existed. And then I would say that the other thing that both of them share is, like, just really truly being artists and being people that care about creating things much more than sort of quote-unquote having a career or, like, releasing products or, like, they're just really about putting yourself kind of out on a limb and trying new things all the time. And I mean, they're working with me. They're working with somebody who really is, like, pretty inexperienced and brings nothing to it except my own, you know, whatever I have internally and as a writer. So to me, that just shows that they're really about creating stuff, front, you know, first, foremost, front, center, like, just try things. They both are just really brave and sort of principled people that way.
Yes, and WGXC does air the Watt from Pedro show that Mike Watt does, a podcast. I think it's on the fourth Monday at 10 p.m., but you can find that wherever you find your podcast, too. And then I wanted to ask you, I guess, Michelle Obama yesterday said she's been mildly depressed, and I just, like, mildly depressed. Haven't we all been, like, incredibly depressed? How is it writing poetry this time of so many things to be upset about, and then you add on to that, your first name has been turned into I don't know what it's been turned into, but if people now call people Karens. So how is it to write poetry during a pandemic when nobody knows what's going on and racial unrest, this presidential election, and so many other bad things we could mention?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I would say that, like, that I find it more challenging to try to work in a time of great instability and insecurity and also isolation. Like, I don't think I realized before this how much I really thrive on just daily contact. And, like, being isolated is